With the 2024 election fast approaching, it looks like Trump's ready to put the grab back in power grab, if you know what I mean.
If we don't win on November 5th, I think our country is going to cease to exist.
Sealing of the border, stopping the invasion, drill, baby, drill, send Joe Biden's illegal aliens back home.
You screw us and we'll screw you. That's what it is.
We should hold a contest to charter up to 10 new cities and award them to the best proposals for development.
When I win, you are all getting tax cuts. Put President Trump back in office. It will all be healed very, very quickly.
I will not give one penny to any school that has a vaccine mandate or a mask mandate. And we will end deadly sanctuary cities.
Trump's promises sound just as insane as they always have, but they're more possible than ever. In 2016, Trump was an outsider who regularly saw his plans thwarted by civil servants loyal to the Constitution instead of him. How dare they? In the 8 years since he was first elected, the GOP has been remade in Trump's image, and seemingly for the first time, he's armed with an actual plan. Project 2025. Ever heard of it? The Project 2025 mandate for leadership offers more than 900 pages of policy recommendations, handcrafted for the next Republican president by the most prominent conservatives in the country. But Project 2025 goes further with three additional pillars: recruitment, training, and implementation. I already made a whole video about this, go watch it after, but suffice it to say that a second Trump administration will come armed with everything it needs to transform the government as we know it and dismantle our democracy from the inside out. The thing that's scarier than an agent of chaos is an organized agent of chaos. What will a second Trump term look like? How could Trump's first 180 days in office change the country as we know it? What, if anything, can be done to stop it? And if we do slide into fascism and autocracy, how could we tell? This is what you can expect from Trump 2.0. Roll the intro. Thank you to my partner on today's video, Trade Coffee. Just in case you didn't know this about me, I love coffee. Okay, espresso, French press, pour over, drip, decaf, half calf, full calf, I want it all. And Trade helps you discover great coffee from the best local roasters around. They have over 450 different coffees, from dark roasts to blends to rare roasts to decaf and everything in between, so you will be sure to find something that you absolutely love. And Trade recently sent me Airship's sugarcane decaf from Colombia, because I'm an anxious girly, so I sometimes need to lay off the caffeine. And this coffee is super rich with notes of toffee and brown sugar. And they have flexible subscription plans, so you can pick what fits your lifestyle and tastes all in one. And this stuff is roasted fresh to order, either pre-ground or whole bean, so you know you're getting the freshest possible coffee. Plus, it comes shipped right to your door, and you know that I love a convenient moment. So what are you even waiting for? Visit drinktrade.com/Legia to get 30% off your first month of coffee. Thanks, Trade. Now, Trump hasn't come out and officially endorsed Project 2025, and he insists that he alone will set the priorities for his next administration. But an awful lot of things he's promising are explicitly laid out in the mandate for leadership. Must be a coincidence. Just like it's probably a coincidence that so many of the people behind Project 2025 were also the ones pulling the strings throughout Trump's first administration. I mean, Trump's name is mentioned around 300 times in the Project 2025 manifesto. Like, the call is definitely coming from inside the House, but sure, he's definitely coming up with all of this himself in his definitely very huge, very smart, big boy brain. Either way, both Trump and Project 2025 have expressed intentions to move fast if he's elected come November and break as much shit as possible, starting with the so-called administrative state. Since campaigning for his 2016 run for the presidency, Trump has fallen in love with Article 2 of the Constitution.
Then I have an Article 2 where I have the right to do whatever I want as president.
It's a thing called Article 2. Nobody ever mentions Article 2.
More importantly, Article 2 allows me to do whatever I want. Article 2 would have allowed me to fire him.
So it sounds
but
like
I wasn't going to fire. You know why?
Absolutely, I have Article 2.
Article 2 relates to the power of the executive branch. Important to this discussion is the vesting clause, which states the executive power shall be vested in the president. Historically, this was understood to mean that one person sits at the top of the executive branch and then delegates those powers to a cabinet and various agencies. Basically, one person can't oversee the complex workings of the entire country, especially as it's grown and expanded since the writing of the Constitution, so the president runs the show but ultimately delegates most of the executive power to people below him. However, since the Reagan years, because of course, this vesting clause has been subject to some very creative reinterpretation in the form of what's known as the unitary executive theory. We talked about the unitary executive theory ad nauseum in that Project 2025 video I made. Again, you should really go watch it after this. But basically, proponents of the unitary executive theory claim that the vesting clause really meant to give all executive power to the president and has been bastardized over the years through the creation of too many agencies that wield too much power and are an extension of government that the founding fathers in their unceasing genius never meant to exist. Therefore, what is really needed in this country is a destruction of the administrative state with all its agencies and commissions and departments and all their pesky regulations and protections so that all the power can be put back into the hands of one single president who can do whatever he or she wants without having to follow anyone else's rules. That's definitely what the founding fathers wanted. Project 2025 presents the unitary executive theory as a critical tool that will allow Trump to circumvent any law he doesn't like. And one of the first things he plans to do upon inauguration is bring back something called Schedule F classification, so he can once and for all drain the swamp of those pesky government employees who have made a career out of civil service, because how dare they? As you may recall, at the end of his first term, Trump issued an executive order that converted thousands of federal workers from pensioned, protected public servants into Schedule F at-will employees subject to firing at any time for any reason. Biden was quick to revoke that order, but Trump will bring it back if he returns to office to take revenge on all the civil servants who interfered with his most unhinged initiatives by, you know, doing their jobs. Remember when he fired and forced out a bunch of top Defense Department leaders who opposed his election fraud claims in 2020? Yeah, that was just the tip of the iceberg. General Mark Milley, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has said he believes Trump will attempt to get back at him and other senior national security figures by throwing them in jail. This didn't come out of nowhere. Trump has threatened to throw lots of people in prison if reelected, including Joe Biden. However, unlike 2016, this time Trump knows precisely which legal levers he has to pull to get what he wants.
You're fired. Get out of here.
Schedule F classifications would allow Trump to turn thousands of federal roles into political appointments, enabling him and his cronies to handpick loyalists to fill critical roles, likely drawing from Project 2025's handy personnel database. And this is concerning given how horrifying his judicial appointees have been. However, while not every position would be a lifetime appointment, agency heads can quickly shift an internal culture by leading by example, namely what they reward and what they punish. The magnitude of damage Trump could do by reinstating Schedule F alone is enormous. There are currently about 4,000 federal employees, and Schedule F could increase that number more than tenfold. Trump yes-men could infiltrate every corner of our government, from the Environmental Protection Agency to our armed forces, clearing the path for whatever sweeping changes the president demands. To prevent this, the Office of Personnel Management proposed a rule in September 2023, making it more challenging to reclassify federal employees and protecting even Schedule F employees from termination. The rule, which nearly 30 advocacy organizations endorsed, looks like a promising defense mechanism, but may not be enough. I mean, how respectful can we expect Trump to be of rules crafted by the very agencies he plans to dismantle? And that's not an exaggeration. Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation, the think tank spearheading Project 2025, admitted to the New York Times Magazine that he wants to see nothing less than downright destruction in the government. People will lose their jobs, he said. Buildings will be shut down. Hopefully, they can be repurposed for private industry. Another tactic Trump will likely use in his quest to conquer the administrative state is the impoundment power, a mechanism through which the president or the executive branch may withhold congressionally appropriated funds from their intended use. So, like, if Congress passed a budget with a bunch of money earmarked for, I don't know, a free-to-the-public COVID vaccination program, Trump could come in and be like, "No, I think I'd rather use those funds to build some more of my border wall, thank you." And we'd all just have to eat it. Trump made his plan to use this impoundment power explicit in a June 2023 campaign video.
"I will then use the president's long-recognized impoundment power
to squeeze the bloated federal bureaucracy for massive savings.
And in his statement, he was able to cram in many conservative buzzwords like tax reductions, slashing the deficit, and massive tax savings. And theoretically, yes, if Trump only used the impoundment power to withhold appropriated funds, it could reduce the deficit. But if instead the deferred or rescinded funds were used just for something different than originally intended, like paying for the tax breaks he's promised, then there would be no net economic benefit because he wouldn't have reduced deficit spending, just reshuffled it. In reality, the impoundment power would mostly give Trump the ability to starve any government programs he doesn't like with impunity. And though he claims that the impoundment power is long recognized and undisputed, we literally have a law called the Congressional Budget and Impoundment Control Act of 1974. Enacted after Nixon's administration impounded as much as $18 billion of federally appropriated funds. So yeah, it's understandable that Congress was like, okay, guys, let's maybe rein things in a little. Of course, Trump is undaunted by pesky technicalities like what the Constitution says, and has clearly stated his intention to fight the limits imposed by that 1974 statute upon his return to office. When it comes to trade, Trump's been clear about plans to continue his America First agenda, increasing tariffs and other trade barriers against U.S. enemies and allies alike. A reminder that in his first term, Trump imposed tariffs on more than $300 billion of Chinese goods. And if re-elected, Trump says he would impose a tariff of up to 60% on all Chinese imports as part of a four-year plan to phase out all Chinese imports of essential goods. I'm talking electronics, steel, pharmaceuticals. Experts warn that Trump's plans would likely violate global trading rules, lead to fierce industrial pushback, and increase American consumers' prices. Trump's also promised to enact reciprocal trade legislation, basically writing into law a tit-for-tat, schoolyard bully style of global economic relations. Under the Trump Reciprocal Trade Act, the U.S. would impose tariffs on other countries identical to those they'd imposed on us, in theory incentivizing the rest of the world to drop their tariffs altogether. At the same time, he plans to set a 10% universal baseline tariff on most foreign goods, not just from China, but from anywhere, which he claims would bring jobs back to the U.S. and decrease taxes. Experts warn that such extreme tariff hikes could jack up prices and keep interest rates unnecessarily high. Domestically, Trump says he would repeal Biden's tax hikes and extend the cuts from his own 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which will expire in 2025. That act has already cost the government around $2 trillion, and extending it for another decade, as Trump has proposed, would reduce federal revenue by at least another $3 trillion. That's $3 trillion we won't get to spend on social services like Social Security, or just generally taking care of all the precious babies that the GOP claims to be so concerned about. Under these tax cuts, policy experts project that the top 1% would save nearly $50,000 a year. Those in the top 0.01% would save more than $175,000 annually, three times the national average of your yearly income, while middle-class households would save less than $1,000. Per year. And income inequality would continue exploding as Reagan's ghost smiles up at us from his throne in hell. One of the most dramatic structural changes proposed by Project 2025 in its attempt to get rid of the administrative state is the dismantling of the Department of Homeland Security and the creation of a massive standalone federal immigration department that Frankensteins together pieces of Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Citizenship and Immigration Services, as well as portions of Health and Human Services and the DOJ. The new cabinet-level body would employ more than 100,000 federal employees, making it the third largest department by workforce and clearing the way for approval of even the most draconian policies. Top of the list, immigration. Immigration has become the centerpiece of MAGA ideology, and a second Trump term would bring an escalation of the already hardline policies we saw the first time around. Goal number one, keep radical Islamic terrorists out of the country. Islamophobia, already running rampant in the wake of the Israel-Hamas war, would have new and newly legal avenues for expression. Trump has already said he would bring back his travel ban and expand its reach beyond the original seven Muslim-majority countries targeted in 2017. Trump would also deport anyone living in the U.S., even legally, found to be harboring jihadist sympathies. What's the definition of jihadist sympathies? Who knows? Last time we let the government discriminate against people based on perceived sympathies, it led to McCarthyism and the Red Scare. But if given the choice, I think the radical right would probably like to bring that back too. Goal number two, carry out the largest domestic deportation operation in American history. Yikes. Project 2025 affirms Trump's calls to complete the border wall and send active duty military and National Guard personnel to help with border operations. This means he could deploy U.S. troops to round up, detain, and deport between 11 and 13 million undocumented immigrants, many of whom have families and community ties here in the United States, and some of whom have been living here for decades. But Trump doesn't care about those connections. He cares about only allowing the right people to exist in the United States, which is why he's also stated plans to use an executive order to end birthright citizenship on his first day back in office. This would prevent federal agencies from granting automatic citizenship to the children of undocumented immigrants. The Project 2025 mandate for leadership calls for an indefinite curtailment of refugee admissions, but also proposes an exception for asylum seekers who pay for premium processing of their claims. Basically, if the asylum seeker is wealthy, let them in. The poors aren't welcome, though. As The Atlantic recently put it, in a second Trump term, we can expect militarization of the border, the third country transit ban, the shutting down of asylum. This time, he's likely to make good on his promise to create a deportation force and enact nationwide deportations. Under Trump 2.0, militarization wouldn't be confined to the border because he will have kicked out every grown-up that held him back from his worst ideas the first time. Like in 2017, when then-Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis wouldn't let him assassinate Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad when he felt like it. Or in the summer of 2020, when he didn't get to sick the military on American citizens during Black Lives Matter protests. Well, not in every case. In Minneapolis, we still had tanks rolling down the streets, and that was with at least a handful of higher-ups restraining Trump's impulses. A Trump 2.0 would theoretically remove those protective forces for good this time. But perhaps the most tremendous blow to Trump's ego came on January 3rd, 2021, 3 days before the insurrection, when all 10 living former secretaries of defense, including Dick Cheney, issued an unprecedented joint statement imploring Acting Defense Secretary Christopher Miller and his subordinates to fulfill their oath to protect and serve the nation and its constitution, not Donald Trump. And though it was disturbing to see violent insurrectionists politely escorted down the Capitol stairs, it could have been a whole lot worse. Imagine if the armed forces had joined in. That's the world Trump wants to live in. And if reelected, there will be very little we can do to stop him from making it a reality. Project 2025's Defense Department chapter calls for a purge of the military's senior ranks to clear out so-called Marxist indoctrination. And when they're calling high-ranking military officials a bunch of Marxists, you know for sure we've lost the plot. All transgender service members would be expelled, and everyone who was dismissed for refusing COVID-19 vaccinations would be reinstated. By surrounding himself with agreeable military and defense officials, Trump would not only take control of the most powerful armed forces in the world to do his bidding, but he could damage the cultural fabric of our military for generations to come. And suppose you kick out all the decorated, responsible, honorable leaders and replace them with a bunch of Trump-loving twerps. They'd quickly establish a culture of conformity to the new status quo. And in a country where civics education is nearly non-existent and military recruitment often targets poor kids from some of our worst school systems, it would be really easy to brainwash young soldiers to believe that their solemn duty is actually to serve the president. Here's what we could expect from a Trump-controlled military.
The New York Times obtaining confidential interviews of fellow SEALs describing Special Operations Chief Eddie Gallagher as, quote, evil and toxic.
The Navy will not be taking away warfighter and Navy SEAL Eddie Gallagher's Trident pin.
Excessive force was in fact used against these protesters, and that they did absolutely nothing to provoke the kind of force that was used against them.
When the looting starts, the shooting starts.
And there'd probably be lots more where that came from if Trump gets reelected. He'd send the troops he's not deploying to the border into blue cities to enforce red state laws nobody there wants. Trump has already said that in cities facing a complete breakdown of public safety, he would authorize federal troops to act until law and order is restored. Of course, he's defined none of these terms, making such threats feel all the more ominous, and he doesn't even need to wait for the complete ideological takeover to permeate the armed forces to get this stuff done. You may have heard rumblings about the Insurrection Act of 1792 potentially becoming a weapon for Trump to grab military control on his first day back in office. The law allows an exception for the president to deploy the U.S. military domestically and use it against Americans to suppress a rebellion or violence. If he wins, Trump has threatened to use the Insurrection Act to put down any protests opposing him. To their credit, a bipartisan coalition of former senior officials is pushing to reform the Insurrection Act before Trump gets the chance to use it. But nothing has made it to Congress yet, so it may already be too late. Experts have warned that Trump could undo anything the Biden administration gets done after June of this year using the Congressional Review Act, a Clinton-era parliamentary procedure that allows Congress to overturn major federal regulations within 60 legislative days of finalization, with a joint resolution of disapproval signed by the president. So there's your reminder that every congressional seat matters. Not that we can guarantee that liberal legislators will wield much power in a new Trump era. In addition to being quite willing to commit acts of violence against the American people, he's mentioned plans to create federal legislation to impose red state policies onto blue states that rejected them. For example, he's already threatened to withhold federal funding from any schools teaching critical race theory or gender ideology. He's also promised to initiate federal civil rights investigations into liberal big city prosecutors, the ones he likes to call Marxist local district attorneys. He also plans to require blue cities to adopt outdated conservative policing policies like stop and frisk as a condition for federal grant money. Former Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter predicts that blue cities would fight hard against such activity, but again, whoever controls the military is pretty much running the show in this theoretical Trump 2.0 hellscape. As for Trump's defense plans abroad, much like his economic plans, it's America first, all the way. He's been clear about his disdain for NATO. As a refresher, NATO is the 32-nation intergovernmental military alliance formed in the wake of World War II to secure peace in Europe and protect against the spread of communism via the Soviet Union. In the summer of 2020, Trump ordered the Pentagon to withdraw 12,000 troops from Germany because Germany hadn't met NATO's defense spending target. Biden stopped the troop drawdown, and in December 2023, forward-thinking lawmakers approved a provision in the National Defense Authorization Act barring the president from withdrawing from NATO without congressional approval. Still, Trump could always quiet quit the alliance by refusing to attend summits or send ambassadors to meetings. Trump's former defense secretary, Mark Esper, told CNN that he thinks it's realistic that in a second term, Trump would cut off assistance to Ukraine before ultimately withdrawing from NATO altogether. A signal that he'd probably be totally cool with Putin taking over not just Ukraine, but any NATO country he wants. But throwing around or withholding our military weight isn't the only way America could fuck with the rest of the world. So let's talk about climate change. The Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, was formed during the Nixon administration in 1970. It was a response to the growing environmental movement that blossomed during the 1960s after the publication of Silent Spring, Rachel Carson's now infamous attack on pesticides. The EPA is responsible for protecting human health and the environment through research, education, grants, regulations, and enforcement. We have the EPA to thank for everything from restrictions on lead paint and DDT to vehicle emissions, wastewater, and more. And sure, all that sounds great for all of us selfish little people who prefer not to be poisoned, but what about the people who loom largest, the corporations, who have had a sacred right to make as much profit as possible? Trump is ready to stand up for those defenseless corporations and turn climate change denial into the law of the land. As in his first term, Trump would appoint a bunch of fossil fuel-loving loyalists to lead the agency. The mandate for leadership calls for a new scientific advisor and at least six new appointees whose qualifications will focus on managerial skills instead of I don't know any knowledge whatsoever about the environment. Trump would eliminate government considerations of damage caused by carbon emissions, force the EPA to eliminate its pollution rules for cars, trucks, and power plants, and withdraw, again, from the Paris Climate Agreement. And while 4 years of bad behavior wouldn't on its own be enough to push the globe into complete climate change meltdown, our example could signal to the rest of the world to slow down or even reverse their climate policies. But we shouldn't be surprised that the conservatives behind Project 2025 aren't interested in preventing or even preparing for imminent natural disasters. They'd rather pretend like nothing's wrong while they drill baby drill in the Arctic. Trump has called renewable energy a scam business, which he would know about scam businesses. And if reelected, he would likely reverse Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, a $370 billion bill supporting clean energy projects and electric vehicles that has been touted as the most progressive bill on climate change in decades. And in a fun dual assault on blue state autonomy and climate protection, Project 2025 also calls for the next president to revoke the federal waiver giving California the freedom to set its own vehicle standards, a mechanism the state has used to create a mandatory phase-out of gas-powered vehicles. Trump first blocked California's waiver in 2019, but Biden reinstated it. Added to the list of Biden-era policies Trump plans to immediately uno reverse upon re-election. Trump's promises also closely mirror Project 2025 and right-wing extremist talking points regarding gender-affirming care.
As Congress
should send me a bill prohibiting child sexual mutilation in all 50 states. That should be easy.
Project 2025's mandate for leadership claims children are suffering from the toxic normalization of transgenderism and calls for the next conservative president to make the institutions of American civil society hard targets for woke culture warriors by deleting the terms gender identity, diversity, equity and inclusion, gender, gender equality, gender equity, gender awareness, gender sensitive, abortion, reproductive health, reproductive rights, and any other term used to deprive Americans of their rights out of every federal rule, agency regulation, contract, grant, regulation, and piece of legislation that exists. Yikes. Schools have already been a major battleground for these so-called woke culture wars, and Trump has publicly endorsed Project 2025's plan to shut down the Department of Education and send all educational decisions back to the states, where schools should be responsive to parents rather than to leftist advocates intent on indoctrination. In a January 2023 campaign video, Trump even said he would give preferential treatment and funding to schools that allow parents to elect principals, abolish tenure for K-12 teachers, and incentivize quality teaching through merit pay. To understand how they might define quality teaching, look no further than the 1776 Commission, a brainchild of Trump's first administration, created in direct response to the New York Times' Project 1619. The 1776 Commission was designed to clarify the facts of our nation's founding so that we might discover a unifying identity rooted in our founding principles. And look, state-sanctioned propaganda campaigns are nothing new. The conservative assault on education comes straight out of the fascist playbook. Capturing the hearts and minds of young people is imperative for any would-be autocrat or dictator. In Nazi Germany, the National Socialist Teachers League, Ministry of Education, and the Hitler Youth worked together to create an educational system that prized conformity and faithfully served the Third Reich. First, they forced Jewish teachers out of their jobs. Later, they expelled all Jewish students. Replace Jewish with trans, and you've pretty much got the Project 2025/Trump plan for the youth of America. Even so, I hesitate to mention Hitler's Germany because it's way too easy for every conversation to devolve into everyone just calling everyone else Nazis, which doesn't get us anywhere. And though Trump does have a fondness for shoving people into camps, his version of dictatorship probably wouldn't look all that much like Nazi Germany. Political scientists have pointed out that our collective understanding of authoritarianism is largely pretty fantastical, rooted in Hollywood films that actually more accurately depict totalitarianism, which is an exceedingly rare form of politics. Much more common and much more likely is the brand of authoritarianism in places like Malaysia and Hungary, characterized not by tanks in the streets and conspicuous violence, but by a slow dissolution of rights and an increase in elections that don't reflect the people's will. This past March, Trump hosted a lavish banquet at Mar-a-Lago for Hungarian autocrat Viktor Orbán.
There's nobody that's better, smarter, or a better leader than Viktor Orbán. He's fantastic. He's the, as you know, the Prime Minister of Hungary, and does a great job. He's a non-controversial figure because he said this is the way it's going to be, and that's the end of it, right? He's the boss.
This is just one of many examples of Trump praising dictators and not so subtly signaling how he intends to run things if reelected. Like when he told Sean Hannity that he wouldn't be a dictator except for day one.
You're not going to be a dictator, are you? I said, no, no, no. Other than day one.
Definitely seems reasonable to assume he'd just try a little dictatorship, but only for one day, just the tip. Trump's ambitions aren't a secret, but the reality is that a lot of us have become too desensitized to his batshit rhetoric to take him seriously, and that in itself can be incredibly dangerous. Hungary, under Viktor Orbán, gives us an insightful model for what American life might be like under a perma-president Trump. Orbán first became Hungary's prime minister in 1990 through a democratic election and left office like a normal person when his term was up. For the next 20 years, Hungary was considered a stable democracy, possibly the most stable democracy in the former Eastern Bloc. But then, in April 2010, Orbán returned to power. His party won 53% of the vote, resulting in a two-thirds majority in parliament. With a supermajority behind him, Orbán made quick work of changing the country's fundamental laws, including its constitution. His party seized control of about 90% of the country's media outlets, stripped the LGBTQ community of its rights, weakened the judiciary and legal system, garnered populist support by cracking down on immigration, and crushed academic freedom. You may remember Orbán from my video on George Soros, whose Central European University had to evacuate Budapest in 2018, making it the first major university forced out of an EU country. So let's check a second Trump presidency's fascism bingo card against Orbán's. Consolidation of power into the hands of one central leader? Check. Civil rights violations, especially against the LGBTQ community? Check. Cracking down on immigration? Check. Crushing academic freedom? Check. Censorship? Half check. Freedom of speech is so deeply ingrained in the American value system that it's unlikely we'd see entirely state-run media under Trump. But we should expect to see a lot more of what we witnessed in 2020. Violence perpetrated on protesters and the press. Again, with greater control of the military, the chilling effect that violent retaliation could have on free speech can't be understated. And the obsession with fake news and the spread of disinformation means that trust in the news media has been obliterated, making national takeover unnecessary. But daily life in Viktor Orbán's Hungary isn't what most people imagine when asked to think about a dictatorship. For most people, it's mainly dull and tolerable. The grown-ups work, the kids go to school, and at the end of the day, everyone doom-scrolls in bed. The military and even the police mostly are out of sight and out of mind. Political protests are less common, but only the most outspoken agitators face severe punishments. The reality is that democracies don't always end with a bang. Sometimes it's just a slow slide into apathy and abdication of responsibility. And look, I'm not here to be the white woman insisting that everyone should happily vote for Biden in November. I meant what I said in my video about whether you're morally obligated to vote for Biden. There are plenty of good reasons to be disappointed with, even disgusted by his administration specifically, and disillusioned with politics generally. But before you commit to sitting this one out in November, I will ask you to do a brief cost analysis. What would it cost you to cast a vote for Biden in November in terms of time, money, emotional bandwidth, your morals, all of it? And given how close this election is likely to be, what might it cost you not to vote or to vote third party? As we've already discussed on this channel, a third party candidate will not win, and that is by design. A multi-party government where the third party candidates actually stand a chance could be in the future if we rouse our representatives to change the rules, but that's a separate issue and not something that will be changed by you casting a third party vote in this election. We're facing a very specific inflection point at this particular moment in history. Because if Trump wins in November, we're not just looking at four more years. We're staring down the barrel of a new regime. As the New Republic recently put it, if Trump wins another term in 2024, Republicans will pretend that free and fair elections in 2028 will absolutely happen until they don't. We've covered a lot of scary possibilities today, but it was far from an exhaustive list. So what policies are especially giving you the heebie Jeebies. Join me on Patreon for exclusive chats that continue the conversations we start here on YouTube. By becoming a member, you'll also get early access to ad-free versions of these videos, plus special extra content like my research notes and links to my sources, exclusive live streams, and my brand new book club. The perks are the same whether you become a member on Patreon or join on YouTube by clicking the big join button down below. Your support helps to keep these videos free for everyone and further our mission towards legal and political education for all. Shout out to my newest supporters as well as supporters in my royal tiers, and a very special shout out to my multi-platinum supporters, Latranger Lucas, Joshua Cole, Thomas Johnson, Sophia Sams, Anthony Giles, and Brett Piontek. Your generosity makes this channel what it is, so thank you. If you like this video, you might also enjoy my ongoing coverage of the Trump trial. Make sure you subscribe and hit the notification bell so you don't miss those weekly uploads. Thanks so much for watching. Have a good day. Bye-bye.